Jeff.
AM950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Jeff Stein's our national and presidential expert, noted author. Find his books at Next Chapter Books, also totallyiowa.com. The Iowa Business Report is the daily show he does down there. Very good show. And, of course, the Iowa Politics Report comes to us from KXEL Cedar Falls, Waterloo, where Jeff Stein, how many hours of radio did you do today?
By the time we get done, it will be 7.
You know, and this is, you see, the problem here is that you're letting everyone know we really don't work that much. And so it's like, are you really, fine, I'll do 7 hours. I guess I won't watch Star Trek today, you know?
Well, let's go back to the fiction that we're trying to promote. They always say, whoever they is, they always say that if you do a spoken word program, whether it's interviews, commentary, talk show, whatever, for every 1 hour you are on the air, you are supposed to do 2.5 hours of preparation.
Yes.
At a minimum. And so basically, if we want to go by that theory, it's about noon on Thursday for me, I think is what it is. But I'm sick of the sound of my own voice, and I'm sure the audience will be in about another 23 minutes.
One, don't give them any fuel for their fires, okay? Two, if I can say, I didn't hear anything you said. I was just scanning the news for what I'm going to talk about next hour. Anyway, there...
That's called multitasking, so you can take your 2.5 hours of prep and condense it. That's brilliant.
Well, there, I guess I can talk about Britney Spears. There is the Grisham book that's coming on out, the former press secretary who never had a press conference for Donald Trump. I want to bring this up first because it is a little lighter and it's kind of funnier. But it is a good reminder of how weird that presidency was. All right. Two notes from the book, okay, that I want to get your thoughts on. First, the party for the gathering they had for re-election night last November, The menu choices included hamburgers, chicken nuggets, and fries. And I said to myself, what is this, a 7-year-old bowling party? I mean, we have to step back. As prior to Trump, you would have expected, we'll have a carving station and roast beef and salads and all these things. And it's just like, yeah, I got some burgers and fries. And hey, I love burgers and fries. I don't eat nuggets, but I love a burger and a fry better, like the next person. But does this see like a warming tray full of burgers? And that's the president of the United States. That's the meal he's putting out. Wow.
Yeah, but this guy's beverage of choice was Diet Coke, right? He would have like 15 of them a day.
He would.
All right, so you remember when the government was shut down and he hosted the national champion college football team at the White House, and it was like stacks of quarter pounders and Big Macs. There's your buffet.
Were all cold. They were all cold, too.
Well, if you remember 4 years before that, they were going to have the big Trump victory party. And Trump, in 2016, said, scale it back, because what he feared was losing, and then there'd be this big ballroom, big splashy stuff, and then he'd be losing. And that's why it looked like he showed up in the hallway of a Ramada Inn that night to say, oh, it looks like I may have won. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, the fear of losing permeated even up to that election night. And again, it was one of these things, what is there to celebrate? Let's just get sustenance. And in his world, that's a Big Mac and nuggets.
Well, he thought he was going to win the second night, though. He thought he was going to win the second night. Well, so was there going to be, is that American cheese on those burgers? How delicious. You know,
you buy America first. So, there's no Swiss cheese, and those are freedom fries also.
Freedom
by the
fries,
way.
Of course they are. By the way, and you mentioned his health with the Diet Coke. There's the first report he came out. He's actually told some people he's not going to run again because of his health. And I go back to that. It's like, well, we saw how he ate for 4 years. For goodness sakes, I'm quite a bit younger than the guy, and I couldn't eat like that.
Well, and you know, it's interesting how we've talked before on this fine radio program about the fact that the 45th president keeps hinting that he's going to run. If only they'd let me run. The Washington Post had a report this week he was going to announce his candidacy in August and then was talked out of it for a variety of pretty good reasons. But what did he say the other day? Unless he gets a very bad phone call from a doctor, you should probably expect an announcement that you'll be happy with. He's opened the door to a health issue. I mean, that's yes. The alibi. It's sort of like, I'm going to throw out the first pitch at the ball game. Oh, man, have I told you about my rotator cuff? You know, you know, you're just setting yourself up with the alibi before you even go into the game.
That's why you have a submarine pitch. All right. So, but you know, as you bring that up, I'll get to the second point. I want to bring something up you just said there, because he went after DeSantis this week. And I just said to myself, okay, you got that story, the other story where he's actually told some people that he's not going to run again because of his health. You've got that out there. But he goes this week and destroys DeSantis. And as we say this, the one thing that crossed my mind is he really is grifting the Republican Party. And he is so terrified of like DeSantis or Kristi Noem or anyone else who might think about running for president to be taking any of his money until he is ready to, you know, betroth whoever he picks as his successor. I wonder, that is going to be a really dangerous strategy. If you're a Republican, the idea that this guy might already know he's not going to run, and he's out there actively sabotaging guys like DeSantis and others who might have the chance to be the Republican nominee, that's a bad strategy for the Republicans.
Right now, I would say the only one who would have a chance at knocking him off in a head-to-head matchup is DeSantis. The reason is because he has a certain following because of how he has handled things in Florida, pre-COVID and post-COVID. You may not agree with it, but I'm saying he has a certain following with regard to how he has handled
within
things.
Within Republican voters, yes.
Yeah, right, right. Well, it's not this audience. You know, I don't think it's libs for DeSantis. You know? I'm not sure that's part of your audience, but here is Governor DeSantis. And many had said prior to COVID, you know, he's got the right policies without all of the mean tweets. So it kind of was like there were a lot of Republicans who said, we like Trump's policies, we just don't like Trump. Well, DeSantis was becoming the heir apparent, if
yes.
you will.
Yeah.
Well, think about a family business. You may be grooming Junior to take over, but if you are Senior and you're not quite ready to let go yet, sometimes you kick Junior back just a little bit to make sure he stops climbing up the ladder.
Yeah.
So I think that Governor Noem is running for vice president. I think Senator Scott from South Carolina is running for vice president, both of whom running to be Trump's running mate. DeSantis is not going to be the running mate, and I think what you've heard in the past week from the former president makes that pretty well clear. And I think Noem, only being 49 years of age, Scott, I'm not sure how old he is, but I'm not sure he's hit 50, they could easily see being the apprentice to Trump. I didn't mean to say that. It just kind of came down the road, and I went with it, figuring that, you know, in theory, if he were to win, he'd be done in one more term and then hand over the keys of the company to the kids. So they're willing to take that and go around the country and try to establish their own credibility. But DeSantis is the threat to Donald Trump.
And Noem, by the way, with her problems. Hey, I don't know if you caught this, but she's no longer looking for input from Corey Lewandowski. I'll just leave that hanging there. There you are.
And then it's hanging on top of the desk.
There you go. Well, it's Lewandowski. He's a punk. But as well, then this whole, I don't know if you've seen the story about how she clearly flexed her muscle as governor to get her daughter this real estate appraiser's license, and that's kind of blowing up on her right now too. So I know that she's got plans for a national ticket, but she's got a, she's got some ugliness that she's going to have to deal with right now before she can plan that.
Well, the way we ended this fine conversation a week ago was the Lewandowski Noem rumors that were just dropping that day, and she got rid of him like a bad habit. And again, it's interesting that just the day after she had this big town hall meeting on Newsmax, a one-hour primetime special where they reached out to her, I've been told, and she said, you know, I've never been to the Reagan Ranch. And so Newsmax arranged to fly her to the Reagan Ranch, and that's where they did an interview. That's where they did this public town meeting. So here she is spotlighted in primetime. Boom, the next day we hear about her daughter wants a license, and so she calls up the administrator just to see how things are going. Yeah. You know, sure. You know, I'm just checking to see how the grandkids are. And then the Lewandowski thing hits. There have been folks in South Dakota who have said, kind of do this job before you run for the next one. And so I think she's going to be keeping a low profile through the winter holidays into the next year, to take care of business at home. She does not have a serious, credible threat at this point, but you certainly don't want to strike out when the pitch is coming over the plate. So she basically is a shoo-in for re-election if she doesn't mess it up. And so she kind of needs to, you know, retrench just a little bit. And I think that's what you're seeing now.
I'm about to say something here, and I'm not saying this because I'm saying this on a straight level. I'll just say this. She's got a little bit of a problem, because if you're going to pick a running mate that's only going to get you 3 electoral call votes or less in their state, you got to have charisma. And I'll just be very blunt. And I'm not saying this because I like Sarah Palin. I'm not saying this because I approve of Sarah Palin. But Sarah Palin had a far more charisma than Kristi Noem does. And I my gut feeling is that she might want to, in regards to the Republican Party. And I understand the Republican Party, you know, might be walking back a little bit from that, but I just do not see, especially with so many others that are looking at that national ticket, that I just don't see that going through because of that reason. Is that there people are thinking of her, oh, she's the next Sarah Palin. But is when it comes to Republicans and their voters, Sarah Palin had charisma for them, and Kristi Noem has just not been able to capture on that fire that Palin did under McCain.
Well, you don't want a running mate that's going to overshadow Donald Trump if you're Donald Trump. And that's why Mike Pence for 3 years and 10 months was exactly what Donald Trump wanted, right? He just wanted somebody who was a good lieutenant who would go to state funerals elsewhere. Noem does that. She gives gender balance. She rides into rodeos, and it's clear she knows how to use a horse. And she makes TikTok videos of clever country songs. So she's kind of got that other little thing going on where she's not a threat to Trump. There are certain cohorts who will gravitate. You're right. She's not Sarah Palin. And that's probably a good thing for Republicans, given how that all turned out.
Well, no, and exactly. To the other story that reminds me of why the Trump years were so weird out of the Grisham book.
Yes.
So the first Easter that they have there, I don't know if you saw this story. Of course, they have the case where the kids, they got a ton of kids that come on out to the White House lawn. And we should remember, and I don't know if you remember this, but you and I were like, that was one of the first things, kind of public spectacles they had, where it didn't seem like anyone was taking it seriously. And people were saying, well, they haven't even started to plan this. It was like 2 weeks beforehand. And yeah, remember that. And so they had it, you know, they had the event. Trump is sitting there. They bring in these kids, and they go up. The kids march up, and they get a picture with the president. And it's a nice little, it's your standard presidential thing. It's like saving the turkey on Thanksgiving. So they come up there, apparently, so that they could get time with him. Eric and Don Jr. had to bring their kids, cut in the line, and then go and see their dad. And I keep seeing about this. I said, wait a second. Your dad didn't say, okay, before we get the kids started, where's Don? Where's Eric? We bring the kids up here. We'll get a family picture. We'll be done. Nope. No, they had to literally cut in line to get their own dad to spend time with them. That is weird, man. That is just plain weird.
Well, did you want him to show favoritism to his children?
Ivanka. I mean, I think we already see it. Oh, of course he loves Ivanka a heck of a lot more than the other toadstools. I mean, but he might want to not be so blatant about it, but yeah, I mean, he does have his favorites.
Well, interesting how they cut in line. They didn't stand in line. They cut in line. Exactly. Here's the thing that's interesting. I don't remember the exact title of what's the title of the Grisham book? Now I'll speak, or now I'll have something to say. You know,
no longer again, a coward, or something like that. Yeah.
No, I don't think that's the actual title. That's the subtitle. But you know, the concept is because fact check. Somebody fact check the program. The fact that she's the only press secretary in history to never wait for it speak to the press.
Yes.
And you know, like the title is, all right, now I'm ready to speak. Oh, okay, that's really clever. How do I say this about this particular tell-all? Has anything about any of these tell-alls, so to speak, that's what I'll call them, tell-alls, has anything really shocked anyone? Yes, it's weird about the Easter egg thing. And you're right. We talked about the fact of, didn't they know that every president does the Easter egg roll the White House lawn? It is a big deal. Okay. Yes, I had forgotten, but you're right. We did make sport of that 4+ years ago. All right, so there's that, you know, his penchant for fast food, whatever. None of this is a surprise because of all the other things we already know about the oddity of things. And again, as has been pointed out because of the most recent Woodward Costa book, bringing Mike Pence in and saying, but wouldn't it be cool to have that kind of power to just rewrite history? You so hear him saying that, don't you?
Well, that's what I would say this. Of all the books that have come out, the Woodward Costa book did shock me. I mean, that the Miley stuff, I mean, that really did put me back on my heels. You're right. This is a comic fest. But at the same time, it just is a reminder of how weird that presidency was and how different it was from every other one. We got to take a break. I want to call him back because we got to get into McConnell caving on the debt ceiling. Jeff Stein joining us, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. The Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Jeff Stein joining us for his weekly visit. So, Jeff, I found it very interesting that the second that Joe Biden said, we're going to work with the Democrats on changing the filibuster because then we can get the debt ceiling raised, the second Biden says that, not only does Joe Manchin come out and saying, I'm not going to change the filibuster, but almost immediately after that, Mitch McConnell comes in and is like, oh, no, I'll raise the debt ceiling. I'll raise the debt ceiling. Now, you and I knew he was never going to. McConnell might be a sycophant, but he's not, you know, he's not really going to tank the U.S. economy at that point. I mean, Ted Cruz, yeah, sure, in a heartbeat, but not McConnell. But at the same time, when you look at this, it does kind of tell me a little bit that McConnell is not quite sure whether or not Republicans are going to pick up that Senate, and they know if they got another 2 years of being in the minority, they need that filibuster.
He's showing two things. One, he's not listening to his base, and that may be a good thing, but he's not listening to his base. And two, he knows full well they're not going to take back the Senate, and he's going to have to spend 5 more years there in the minority, or at the very least for the next couple of years, because he was just reelected. So at some point things may change, but he's looking at being in the minority for the foreseeable future. Here's what you don't want to have if you're Mitch McConnell. See, he presented two options, right? One of them was, we won't block your fast-track reconciliation, parentheses, because it's going to make you guys look really bad, and so we're going to let you do it. The other was, we'll give you a limited expansion of the debt ceiling for 2 months, so that you can fix the crisis you created. That's his words.
Yeah. No,
all right.
Yeah.
Those were his words in the release. Well, here's the thing. He didn't expect anyone to take him up on it. And the Senate then took him, or the Democrats in the Senate took him up on it and say, okay, we'll do that debt ceiling increase. And then you get Elizabeth Warren saying McConnell caved. Now, we all said that. Anyone with a brain watching said McConnell caved. But you don't need Elizabeth Warren saying McConnell caved in those words, because that's the headline on every channel right now. And how weak does he look compared to Chuck Schumer and the Democrats?
And by the way, since you talk about media coverage, reminder, all the big financial news outlets, Wall Street Journal, Forbes and those guys, all of them say that they were going with the Yellen quotes. And they're basically saying, if you allow this to happen, it's going to destroy things. And you know as well as I do, if you're just talking to all the finance people, all the money people, New York, the East Coast, those people, the people that, yep. that the few New Yorkers that love the Republicans, I guarantee you they were making calls to McConnell at that point, too.
Sure. And what happened? The market went back up after he made the offer.
Yep.
So, again, what are they doing? Are they standing for principle? As he had been steadfastly saying, so this is the problem when you make a steadfast claim like, we're going to let you do it all by yourself. You're not going to get any help from okay, we'll help you. Oh, come on. How absolutely weak can you look at that point?
Daschle. Oh, God, that's a Tom Daschle. I will say this, too, is that I think what McConnell just exposed, too, is he is so terrified of any changes to the filibuster. Because he knows that if it happens once, a lot of Democrats are like, well, if we're already going down this path, and we already are changing the filibuster on judicial nominees. That was the agreement that Member McConnell made at the beginning of this session, is that, okay, we'll let you get your judicial nominees out there. We're not going to stop those. But the he is clearly terrified of the Democrats, changing up the filibuster.
Well, we already know what happened, because Harry Reid changed the filibuster rule for judicial nominees. McConnell then changed it for the Supreme Court. So we already know what happens if you start making carve-outs to the filibuster. And it's almost like neither side wanted to deal with that, because paybacks are, complicated.
Well, and that one would come back to haunt you if you all of a sudden said, okay, we're going to put the filibuster back in, especially on the SCOTUS nominees. You go get some sleep, my friend. And my gosh, you get some rest today, right?
Yeah, because I'm doing the same thing tomorrow.
You are?
Yeah, I'm that stupid. I'm doing the same tomorrow.
Sign of the cross, man. All right. Well, you take care. All my best to you, my friend. And we'll talk to you next week, okay?
Thank you, Matthew.
You got it. Jeff Stein, once again, find his books over at nextchapterbooks.totallyiowa.com. Also, we'll spotlight this interview. You can find it up online. And the Iowa Politics Report. I will post that a little bit later on as well. We'll be back. Hour 2 of the show up next.